Welcome to the Property Investors Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. Make sure you subscribe so you never miss an upload. You can catch us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Enjoy this week's show and don't forget to share it with all your friends.
Hey, I'm Russell Lee.
Hey, I'm Ricky Mandel.
And welcome to the Property Investors Podcast. On this week's show, we're going to be discussing how to properly set up and structure your property business. Now, number one, do you think it's important that you structure your business correctly?
Yes.
Do you think it's important that you structure it correctly from the beginning? Because a lot of advice out there, especially with, you know, entrepreneurs and startups, is look, just don't spend ages worrying about getting everything perfect and your tax affairs in place. What's the point of getting your tax affairs set up
when you ain't even making any money yet?
Correct.
Right.
Correct. So if you were starting from scratch, would you think, right, I need to get everything set up correctly immediately? Or would you think, no, what I need to do is I need to go out there, prove that it works, make some money, and then once the money's coming in, I can then use that money to get myself set up correctly?
I mean, I'd do a kind of half-half. I would do a mixture. I would set up what I need to get set up properly, and I would set up to put my best foot forward properly, but I wouldn't worry about a lot of things that you might hear you need to worry about to begin with. Like things like, I need to get a trust in place to begin with. I need to have these holdings companies. I need to have this. No. Don't worry about that stuff. In my opinion, you just need a limited company that you can do business through, because you can change things anyway. It's very easy to set up a new company. It's very easy to move things in companies. It's very easy to rejig companies. That's what I do to begin with. I think as you scale, you would want to then look at it and restructure it maybe. It can be a little bit difficult to restructure things once you've got an established business and you're turning it. It can be a little bit more difficult, but to begin with, it's baby steps, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, what I would say, first of all, is there's two... When you're a property entrepreneur, when you're a property investor, there's two different sort of ways that you can make money.
Yeah.
The first is you can make money by investing in property, i.e. buying property, holding it, and you make money from that through capital appreciation and through rent.
So I'm just blowing my nose because I get ill whenever I hear about companies that don't make money.
Okay. You're allergic. You're allergic to companies that don't make money. All right, so that's your first one. That's that. Then you've got your entrepreneurial property activities, okay? So this will be a completely separate from your investment company.
You don't want to mix the two.
No. Which it could be that you're doing rent to rents, it could be that you're doing deal selling, it could be that you're doing property management or whatever it is. So there's two ways that you're gonna make money. The first thing you need to do is get it clear in your head that they are completely separate.
Yeah.
Because I see a lot of people that do things like have a deal sourcing business and they have a company for that, and then they use that company in the same company to buy property and things like that.
It's a very dangerous thing to do. I mean, the liability alone is, you know, if you own houses in a company that are worth, you know, you've got £1 million portfolio and you've got equity in there making good money, and then you're deal sourcing in the same company, something goes horribly wrong, which if you trained properly our students, it's never happened when people have been trained properly. But if you haven't got the education, you haven't got the knowledge, then it could happen where you sell someone a deal, it goes bad, it goes wrong, and they take legal action against you and they sue you. And let's just say you lose in court and you have to pay damages and costs out. Well, if you've been training through the company that holds your assets, now them assets are liable. Everything in that company is liable. The equity in there, the house in there. So you want to keep it separate. You want to have your slow pound investment business, which is assets that are safe, secure. That's over there. All of your trading stuff, when you're dealing with customers directly, taking pay, a trading business needs to be separate. Because if you're mixing it all together, then everything you've got is at risk. Your assets are at risk. It's a dangerous place to be.
Yeah. So let's start then with your trading business, with your property entrepreneurial activities. So really you've got two main options. I suppose you could do LLPs and maybe three, but pretty much two main options, which are number one, sole trader.
Yeah.
AKA you don't really set anything up.
No.
You just make money as Ricky Mandel.
Yeah.
Makes money yourself. Number two is that you set up a limited company.
Yeah.
What did you do?
I done limited company.
Okay, why?
because it's cheap, it's quick, it limits your liability.
So for example, if you own your own house, as Ricky Mandel the person, and you've got assets as Ricky Mandel the person, and then you set up a limited company and something goes wrong and you accidentally give bad advice to an investor and they lose loads of money and they sue you, are they suing Ricky the person or are they suing Ricky Mandel Limited the company?
Yeah, they're not suing me, they're suing the company.
Which means that your house and stuff is safe. That's the whole point of a limited liability company, a limited company. You're limiting the liability to the company, not to you. So from a suing, etc. point of view, it makes sense. But it also makes sense, I think, from a tax point of view as well, particularly the more that you earn.
Yeah.
You know, there are tax advantages because you can take dividends out rather than taking everything as salary, and there's different ways that you can structure it. But I suppose that's what you kind of meant by worrying about that sort of stuff later on.
Yeah.
The first thing that I would recommend doing for those companies, deal sourcing, rent to rents, property management, whatever it is that you just go and set up a limited company. How difficult, for someone that's not done it before, how difficult or how easy is it to set up a limited company?
When I first met Samuel and yourself, and you said, let's get yourself a limited company, I actually expected to sit there maybe for a couple of days with you guys, you know, setting up a limited company.
Yeah, doing what? Going to like HMRC?
Yeah, like, you know, all this paperwork, big folders. But the reality is, it took me 15 minutes.
But it is very expensive, isn't it?
I mean, yes, you will. I mean, if you know, maybe you're on minimum wage salary, you've got a job, maybe it will take you not a couple of years to save up for it. It will probably take you, if you're on minimum wage right now, it'll probably take you about an hour to save because it's about £12.
Right. And do you use like Companies Made Simple?
Yeah, can use web, like there's a website called Companies Made Simple where you I don't think it's so hard to articulate how easy it is.
Yeah.
As long as you know your name and a few details about yourself.
Do you know your name?
Ricky. I know my name.
Got it.
As long as you know your name and a few details about yourself, and also you have £12 that you can pay with. It doesn't even have to be yours. You just need a card with £12 on it. You can set up a company.
And there are a couple of questions where you might think, oh, but you kind of can't get it wrong. So, like, for example, like, how many shares?
Yeah.
So do you normally do like 100 shares?
Well, yeah. Well, it depends if I'm doing joint ventures and stuff. But yeah.
So, but which you kind of have to set up. So you might want to put 100 shares valued at like £1 each.
Yeah, £1
or something.
Each.
So there are certain things to bear in mind. And if you are setting up a joint venture, you can have, for example, A shares and B shares.
Yeah.
One of has controlling votes. So there are a couple of
things that, you know, depending on what you're actually doing.
But pretty much, you're right. It's very, very easy. Right?
Yeah, it is very easy.
So we recommend limited company over being a sole trader for companies like deal sourcing, property management, rent to rent. Would you have one company that did a bit of rent to rent, bit of property management, bit of deal sourcing? Would you set up a separate company for each?
Set up a different separate company for each, I would.
I agree.
Set up a separate company for each. They're different businesses, aren't they?
Yeah.
Deal sourcing isn't the same business as a management business. Management's not the same as deal sourcing.
For example, management needs different compliance to deal sourcing.
Yeah.
Which needs different compliance to rent to rent, etc.
And right? What some people might do is they might be like, well, I'll set up a deal sourcing business. I'll also put the SIT code for management as well. So I've got the option to do it. But they may have no intention of managing properties. They just might think, I'll just put it just in case I want to do it. But then now you're obliged to get anti-money laundering and certain insurances, and that will end up costing you a lot more money.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it totally makes sense. All right. So then when it comes to... So with that, I mean, it's pretty simple. When it comes to buying property...
Yeah.
Again, you're going to have different options of how you do it. Are you going to do it as sole? Are you going to do it in your own name? And a lot of people used to do that back in the day. Not even that long ago, actually. A lot of people used to buy properties in their own name. Or you can buy it through a company. Now, there are pros and cons to both, right? So one of the pros of buying in your own name is that you can buy your own house in your own name, which you can get a much cheaper mortgage on, etc. Right? So you probably only need is less interest. You can only put down like a 10% deposit rather than 25% deposit. So if you're buying your own house, I do think it makes sense to buy it in your own name. However, what about if you're buying investment properties, buy-to-let properties? Do you tend to buy in your own house, in your own name, or in a company name?
In a company. And it's it's not harder to get lending through a limited company. It's the same. It's the same process. They don't really care about the company. You could set up a company today and buy a house in it today. So we buy in limited companies. Generally speaking, you've got 25% deposits, as you would if you're buying in your own name anyway to rent as a buy to let. But the difference is with the rental income for a company, the mortgage payments that go out tax deductible.
The interest on the mortgage. Whereas they're not in your own personal name. So in layman's very, very simple terms, let's say your mortgage interest payments on your rental property is £1,000 a month, you pay for your mortgage. And the rental income is £1,000 a month as well that's coming in. So you'd look at that and you'd say, well, we're making zero profit, therefore you pay zero tax.
Yeah.
However, if you buy it in your own name, is it what, section 24?
Yes.
If you buy, I've got 21 on the brain after the eviction notices. If you buy it in your own name, you're not allowed to claim that £1,000 as a tax deductible expense.
So, and that's crippling landlords.
Oh, massively.
Yeah.
Because they would look at it and they would say, well, you've made £1,000 then.
Yeah.
Which means you've got to pay tax on £1,000. Yeah. Which might be, if you're a high rate taxpayer, could be at 40%. So you're like, okay, so I'm making no money and I'm having to pay £400 tax.
Yeah.
That's crazy, isn't it?
What are your thoughts on holdings companies? Do you have a holding company?
I think when you're getting started, I wouldn't even think about it. I would just buy... here's a question for you, though. Do you have a holdings company?
No. I was going to get one, but I didn't for a certain reason, which I'll tell you about in a moment.
Go on, tell me now.
Because if you have a holdings company and you want to... buy houses, what you would do is you'd have a holdings company, then you'd set up a subsidiary, let's say company A, which would be a subsidiary to your holdings. You would own 100% of the holdings company, then you would own, the holdings company would own 100% of company A. That's how it would work, set structure. Now, from my experience, it's difficult to get lending on subsidiary companies if you have holdings companies involved.
It's also difficult to get them out. So you can always put them into a group structure if you want.
Yeah.
But once you've got a group structure in place,
yeah,
it's difficult to take them out of the group.
Now, there are certain benefits to it, though. There are certain benefits to having subsidiary companies. Like, if you have a company, let's say you've got company A, and then you set up a whole new company, company B, and company B is brand new, you're going to buy a house in company B, and the funds are in company A. You need to move the funds from company A to company B in the form of a director's loan. Now, because they're not related in any way, that loan, you'll pay interest on the loan, which will be base rate. Now, if you have a holdings company and you've got, or even if you've got company A and you've just created a subsidiary company to that company A, company B, now you can loan the company money and you won't have to pay interest because they're subsidiary companies, they're related companies. Well, I'm not an accountant, of course. You need to speak to an accountant.
But from my understanding,
that's how it works. But check with an accountant. But that's like the pros and cons to it. You know, there are pros and cons to having different setups. I guess it depends what you're doing.
And this is kind of why we say it's best to get started now, but rather than thinking everything through at the beginning, because you don't know which direction you're going to go in, you don't know what rules are going to come into place, etc. But you want to do a little bit, and I think that little bit is just getting a limited company, buying a limited company.
And also, people worry too much about, do I need to be VAT registered? What happens with this? Listen, you can't be VAT registered unless you're making enough money to be VAT registered.
Well, you can.
You've got the option to do it. But, you know, well, obviously, it's the option. You don't have to. You don't need to worry about it until you hit that threshold. Also, you ain't going to pay tax on money that you don't make.
Unless you buy it in your own name.
But even then, you just speak to an accountant at the end of the year when your tax year comes. You got to file your account. So you speak to an accountant.
Yeah. 100% should speak to an accountant. Here's a question for you then. Would you recommend, we talked about with different trading businesses, would you recommend buying let's say you bought four properties, would you buy them in the same limited company, or would you set up four limited companies and buy each property individually in a different individual company?
I would buy maybe two in the same company, and then I would open new companies.
Why two? Where did that figure come from?
Well, because I don't want to be, it's just spreading out the income, isn't it?
I would buy one in each.
So you'd separate each one for liability?
No. When Tony Blair bought his house, right? I can't remember the exact figures. I'm going to make the figures up, but the point's the same.
Right.
When Tony Blair bought his house, let's say it was a £2 million house.
Yeah.
He would have had to pay, let's say, 300 grand stamp duty. I don't know what it was.
Right.
But let's say it was 300 grand.
300 grand stamp duty?
Yeah.
What house was he buying?
Samuel's house was about that, 300 grand stamp duty. I think Sam was that about a £3 million house, something like that. We're looking at the calculator later.
Right, okay.
But the figures don't matter, but yeah,
okay, right.
It was something crazy like that, right? So he was going to pay out 300 grand stamp duty. However, he managed to avoid paying for that stamp duty. Do you know how he managed to avoid it?
Go on.
He didn't buy the property. He bought
the company, and he inherited the property.
Correct. And when you buy a company, you don't have to pay the stamp duty. You might, there might be a very small amount, but you don't have to pay the stamp duty like that, right? So it saved him an absolute fortune.
Is there any benefit to the seller?
Yeah. Imagine if you're the seller and you turn around and you say, look, I know that my house is up for 3 million, and I know that one's up for 2.9, and I know that that one is probably worth the same as mine. But with mine, you can buy the company. It's going to save you.
So you could up your price as a seller because you know that they'll save on tax?
I think so, yeah. Wouldn't you? If you were an investor and you were looking to buy a property and they said, hey, look, this is what the stamp duty would be. However, you can buy the company instead and then you'll save on stamp duty. Would you pay a bit more for that property?
Well, yeah, but then how would it work with... I'm just trying to think out loud it now. But then, if let's say it's worth, you got houses on the same street, 3 million, 3 million, 3 million, that's what they're worth, that's what they're selling for. Then you got this one over here, which you could buy the company, and that's 3.3 million.
Yeah.
Won't the valuer then come out and be like, hold on a minute, you're buying it for 3.3, but it's worth 3 million. So we'll give you your loan to value based off of it being valued at 3 million.
Yeah.
So you will have to put more money in as a deposit.
Yeah, but... Yes.
But then you've got the
equity. But then you're not having to... But you don't get a mortgage for stamp duty, do you?
Well, no.
So it would make no difference. So let's say you split it in the middle. Let's say you were saving 300 grand in stamp duty and the property was up for 3.15.
Yeah.
So the landlord was basically saying, look, you would have to pay 300 grand stamp duty if you bought it for its real value. Let's meet in the middle. I bet you could... I'm not really in the game of selling properties, right? So it's not something I've particularly done because everything I've bought, I've kept. That's my plan. I don't plan on selling.
Yeah.
My plan is to refinance. Why do you want to refinance to sell? You don't have to pay capital gains tax. You don't pay tax on debts. So it's very tax efficient not to sell. However, if I did want to sell, I'd want to get the most that I could. And I think if you own it in a limited company... You could use that as a negotiation tactic, especially when you're dealing with investors. I spoke to someone the other day, one of the parents at our school, and they bought a house. I imagine it was similar sort of money to what we're talking now. It'd be at least 2 million, probably more. And the buyer offered them to buy the company to avoid the stamp, and they said no. And I was like, you said no, you're nuts. And they were like, oh, it sounded a bit dodgy. I was like, Tony Blair did it.
It sounds like they need to come to a crash course.
They definitely do need to come to a crash course. But I think that would be a smart... for me.
So buying them in individual companies.
Buy them in individual. Because the problem with your idea of buying them in two is, let's say, you'd have to go, well, look, do you want to buy both of them?
Yeah.
No. Now, it's not going to matter on low-end properties. The property's only worth 100 grand.
Yeah.
It's not going to be very much a stamp, right? It's not going to make much of a difference. But... that property that's 100 grand, what's that going to be worth in 40 years' time?
Yeah, but a lot of your properties, are, you know, we're talking about hotels and factories and all sorts going on there. If I was buying hotels right now, factories like you are, then I would put them in separate companies.
Yeah.
But just little
I still think you would for little ones, because what's give me an example, right, of a property that you've bought that's in, how much is it?
Just 300 grand.
300 grand. What's that property going to be worth in 20 years time?
Probably 900, 800, 900.
Is it?
Probably more.
What do properties do over 10 years on average? Double. We talked about this. Double, right? So in 10 years, how much roughly will it be?
Right, maths, hold on.
300 right, plus 300.
600.
600. And then another 10
double
years.
Double 12. 600 1.
1.2 million.
Yeah, but yeah.
Suddenly, it's a lot of money, right? You're going to save on stamp duty.
You're making me question myself now. Maybe I'm thinking I need to speak to the accountant.
Maybe.
Food for thought.
I'd be interested to know what you guys do. Comment in the comments below. How would you buy it? Would you buy it in one? Would you buy it in two? Would you buy it in your own name? How are you buying properties? Very interesting to know. But yeah, I agree with you though. I think your advice at the start was bang on, which is don't worry too much about the end, right? Don't worry about your group structure. Because you can get the expert advice on that, because it depends. It totally depends, and you want to weigh up the pros and cons. The first thing you need to do is focus on making money.
Yeah.
And it's very easy just to set up a limited company, use that, and then focus on the money-making activities. I think too many people spend too much time worrying about the XYZ and not focusing on the ABC. Would you agree with that?
I agree with that. You can't even go to the XYZ before you've walked the ABC. Walk the ABC first. Did I say that right? ABC.
Yeah.
Walk the ABC first, then worry about the XYZ.
Yeah,
because otherwise you end up doing nothing.
Well, what you end up doing is you end up with those people that start a business and they've got a beautiful website.
Amazing business cards.
Fantastic business cards. They've got the perfect CRM system.
They have the perfect company name. Their family all approves of it. In fact, they had a meeting, numerous meetings, last year for 12 months deciding on it. And in January, new year, new start, they finally decided to start their business. When they could have made money in the last year if they just got started straight away.
But the other thing is, not only is it slower, but it's also actually less efficient. Because the best way of getting better and learning is to actually do. Yeah. Trial and error. Learn from what you're doing and getting feedback. And sort of like, okay, well, what I did this, it didn't work. There's only so much. If you spend all your time in the boardroom trying to come up with a perfect business model, trying to get everything spot on, you're never going to be able to do it as good. No. As if you do want to do a bit of that. It's a balancing act. You want to do a little bit of that, but you want to get out in the real world and try it.
Yeah.
And ask the market. Yeah. What works? What do you want? Then trial and error. Same with anything. Like, I recently went skiing, and I'm not going to spend ages and ages just practicing the moves. I want to just get on the slopes.
Yeah.
I want to go out there and do it. So what I did was, but I still want to get trained. Yeah. I don't want to just go out like an idiot.
No, but you do it.
And
you
die.
Look, but even when you went for ski lessons, right?
So yes.
Yeah,
so
even when you go for ski lessons, you don't just watch videos of people skiing. They do it with you.
Yeah.
They're there helping you.
Yeah. So I booked a crash course. I booked some private lessons. And then I was like, right, that's enough now for me to go out on the slopes, give it a crack.
And I think that's one of the reasons why our training company is so successful. Because we don't, the way that we train, the way that Samuel does it, is he does it with you.
Yeah.
You know, when you're at a crash course, you don't just sit there kind of, when you come to a crash course, you're not sitting there watching PowerPoints for, you know, 6 hours or just listening to Samuel speak. You're actually, on the crash course, people walk away with opportunities that they found on the day. And I think that's, you know, so it's a similar principle, isn't it? When you learn to ski, they're doing it with you. You actually do it to learn. The best way to learn is to do. It's same with us. The way that we train is we do it with you. We you know, we find deals together. We support you with it. You know, if you're interested in getting started in property and wanted to learn more, I'd highly recommend coming to a crash course where we do it with you. We show you what to do. We've got the support there. The next crash course, maybe we'll put a link in the description.
Yeah.
Get yourselves booked on.
You're going to be there.
I'll be there. Samuel will be there. Our team will be there.
Do you want to hear a funny story about our skiing trip?
Go on.
All right. So, obviously, you know, we did the lessons, but we're still pretty inexperienced.
Yeah.
Right. So, pretty inexperienced. So, there's nine of us.
Right.
The only one of us that's been ever before
right.
is Samuel.
Right.
And he's been twice.
Right.
So it's not like he's a super experienced skier. And the last time he went was 5 years ago.
Right.
All right. So none of us really know what we're doing.
Yeah.
Bit out of our comfort zone, bit out of our depth, which is where you learn the best, right? So we went the first day, and we used the ski lifts and everything, and we did not too bad. Second day, went to a different place. You've been skiing, haven't you?
Yeah.
So you know you've got like the cable cars.
Yeah.
You've got the ski lifts where you're out open and you sit down like a bench that floats. And you've also got...
floats.
Kind of floats through the air. Yeah. You've also got the one that's like a bit like a zip wire, I suppose. So it's like a rope.
Right.
And then there's like a metal T-bar, upside down T-bar.
Yeah.
Right. Have you been on those ones?
I haven't been on them ones particularly, no.
Right. Now, Samuel had never been on those before, despite being skiing a few times, right? So we went to this new resort, and that's what they had. So we got to the bottom, and we're like, okay, we need to use this to go up. Now, normally, it's quite busy on all the other ones. So you can kind of watch other people go first, and you can learn from them. You can see how they do it. This, but there was no one around, right? So we were there at the bottom of this queue, and Samuel's like, oh, I've never actually been on this before, right? I now know what you're supposed to do. So what you're supposed to do, now that I know, is you kind of go in front of the tee, and the thing at the kind of sit, you don't sit on it, but you kind of lean back on it, right. and it goes, and it drags you up the hill. Samuel didn't know that. So Samuel held it like he was doing a pull-up,
yeah.
Right? So he holds the bar, and it starts dragging him up the slope. So I went behind Samuel. I obviously didn't know either, so I did the exact same thing. I held it, started getting dragged up the slope. Right, what I didn't realise was the slope, I don't even know how long it was, but it's probably 5 minutes to the top. So after about a minute, my arms, it's like doing a dead hang, right?
Right.
Your feet are on the floor, but the pressure on your arms, right, it was terrible. But you can't let go, because if you let go...
You're going to go down.
You're going to fall down the hill, and you're stuck on this lift bit. You're not on the slope, right? You're on this sort of side of the mountain. So we're going along, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is terrible. Samuel's ahead of me, thinking the exact same thing. Then suddenly, Samuel lets go on a flat bit, right? And his plan is, he's going to let go, rest his arms for a bit, and then when another one comes up, he'll grab onto that. But what we didn't realise was, we're holding them down, so as soon as he let go, it shot up.
Oh,
right.
Man.
So all the other ones are, like, really high. So now he's stuck, right? He's just stuck on the side of the hill. So I see him, and he's like, I'm stuck. I'm like, sorry, mate, you're on your own. You're on your own. I go past. Behind him, Tyrone has sat on it correctly.
Right.
So it's like the T, he's sitting on it correctly, and because it's a T bar, he's on the one side, and there's a space to the left. So he sees Samuel stranded. He's like, Samuel, jump on. So Samuel's like, oh, thanks, mate. Right. Shuffles on, knocks Tyrone.
Oh, no.
Off. So Tyrone's like splatted on the ground, falling off, right? So Samuel, but in the panic, kind of falls, and he's kind of holding on to it. In the same position he was before, but now backwards.
Oh, my goodness.
It collapses and it drags him, and he's being dragged up the slope on the floor. Ibby sees this, films it. I'll show you the video in a bit. It is very, very funny. Ibby films it. Samuel lets go. Ibby manages to get past him, gets further up, catches up with me. I've fallen off as well, right? So I'm stuck on the side. Ibby tries to get me on. I jump on, knock Ibby off. Skis are going everywhere. Now people that are coming up behind us are tripping over our skis. It was just...
something you'd see on TikTok.
Mate, it was an absolute disaster. But other than that, it went really well.
Really well.
Really well.
Good trip.
Great trip. But that little part there, we quickly left that part of the ski.
And never went back to the resort.
And never went back there ever again. But yeah, it was pretty hilarious.
Well... sounds... I'll have to see the video.
I'll show the video. So maybe I might try and maybe put it onto this video maybe as well. But yeah, it was pretty crazy. So basically the advice is...
sit on a ski lift properly.
Don't be afraid to go and make a mess of it.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's the way you learn. You just got to do it. Get your limited company set up for your entrepreneurial business, get your limited company set up for buying your properties, and then just get out there and do it. You want to get trained? Of course you do. I wanted to get trained when I went skiing. I'm not going to go, I'm just going to turn up on the slopes and I'm going to watch YouTube videos. Of course not, right? I'm going to get trained to do it. I had some one-on-one training. I spent thousands of pounds learning how to ski. But once I'd learned, then you need to take the action. You're not going to mess around. Now, yeah, you're going to make mistakes. But that's how you learn.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
I agree.
We're on the same page.
We're on the same page.
Brilliant. Well, I've been Russell Leeds.
I'm Ricky Mandel.
And we'll see you guys next week.